This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Sacha Labore from CloudBees.
Hello, Ian. How are you doing?
Not bad. We're here at Jenkins World. What's the big news this week?
Oh, lots of big news. The one that's closest to my heart is the announcement of the CloudBees suite and everything we're doing as part of our feature set with CloudBees Core, DevOptics, and so on. That's a big news for us.
You currently sit in that group of companies that have on-premise solutions and cloud-based solutions. One of the challenges is how do you evolve your code base so that you can optimize for different platforms? Where are you on that journey?
Yeah, it's right. One of our strengths is that we make it possible for companies to get help on their DevOps journey wherever they fit. They might start on-premise, they might evolve in the cloud, so there is a need for that flexibility. At some point, initially, we were working really out of a generic code base, and we quickly saw some of the limitations out of that. Because it's not just about operating in an environment, it's also you want to be perceived as native as part of that environment. About a year ago, we decided to have what we called cloud-first approach, where really new features would be thought of in the context of cloud first and foremost. And we also made a pretty strong statement internally that Kubernetes would be our new infrastructure, our new platform. A lot of the things we're doing is not just cloud first, but Kubernetes first. Then based on this, we decide whether some features are simply features that can be run on both platforms or features that we are going to first develop on Kubernetes and then might retrofit on-premise, or maybe some features that we decide not to put on the classic type of environment. We make those type of choices. And we also had a British team, James Strachan, James Rowling, Rob Davies, join and work on Jenkins X. And that's also the same philosophy. They really decided to reboot a lot of things related to Jenkins, starting from Kubernetes to live and breathe and smell like Kubernetes. At the end of the day, there is no real other way around it. You need to develop in a native way.
How long can you maintain multiple code bases because there's a cost associated with this? There's the challenge of customers as they start their migration journey from one platform to another platform where they find new features, or conversely, they have to lose features. There's a challenge for developers. Which platform are you going to write for? APIs will differ between the platforms.
We're lucky in some way because a lot of those extensions happen on Jenkins itself. And so we wrap Jenkins. And so a lot of what I was describing being cloud first and so on is around this wrapper and all of the services associated to scaling to a much bigger environment. The benefit we're getting is that those plugins will likely work both on premise as well as in cloud type of environments. However, you're right. There is at some point a trade-off that must be made. We took this decision knowingly. We know that for some customers that might be less than ideal. I think what gave us this courage, if I might say, is that we're perceiving that this digital transformation on the market is really accelerating, if anything, and cloud is accelerating. We're talking to customers where even 6 months or a year ago, they would tell us no cloud ever. And now they're coming red-faced and saying, okay, we were told that we're going to go to the cloud. And so we can't really feel it. This pressure is real. And so it makes us feel good about this decision.
How are customers making that journey? Are they simply wanting to take what they've done at the moment and drop that into the cloud version? Are they looking for a hybrid period of time where they run some things on-premise, move some projects into cloud, align the two, understand the differences?
The larger you are, the more complex it's going to be because you might have different geo. You're going to have entire department very focused on on-premise, others that are more leading edge looking at the cloud and so on. So and that's some of the good things sometimes with Kubernetes. It makes it possible to create those federated environments more easily. That, I think, is a challenge that any company has to solve on their own, decide what's the shortest path. What we see also in terms of this adoption is that we see phases. And what's amazing about CI/CD is that it's spiky usage. Sometimes you have big compilation and release and so on, so you need a lot of resources, sometimes less so. It's a great use case for companies to start adopting cloud because they get to leverage the cloud. That means deploy CI/CD and CloudBees Core in the cloud, so they have to know how it works. They can use that to become trained and relearn, essentially, a lot of new things. It doesn't come for free. You have to learn. Yet you might still want to deploy your application on-premise. So it's not because you build and test in the cloud that you don't deploy on-premise. So the first stage is a great learning case that can be made about leveraging spiky behavior in the cloud. However, what we're also seeing more and more is not to use the cloud just as a bunch of elastic specific resources, but to use it as a destination for net new applications. That's also happening where a lot of new departments are creating new applications in a native fashion in the cloud. What we're seeing emerge now more and more is organizations saying, okay, well, we told you we want to bring only new application to the cloud. It's not quite true. We'd like to start accelerating the migration of some of the older applications if we can. Think about the Java workload and so on. They seem like a pretty good fit. They've been well architected, so why not migrate them to the cloud? That's also what, for example, the Jenkins X team is doing. It's not just CI/CD on Kubernetes, but a lot of what they do is about lift and shift existing application and repackage them as cloud-native applications. It's an interesting time from that standpoint. Cloud adoption means different things to different people.
One of the challenges of them moving that code, and something you've been through, is that we think our code's very well architected. But as soon as we change an underlying platform, it exposes so many things, dependencies, flaws, apps we didn't even really know we were using because a developer thought it was cool and would solve a problem. How much of your learning are you beginning to package up and take to the community? And how many of your large customers are coming to you and saying, look, you've been down this route, we're just starting. How can you accelerate us?
Yeah, it's interesting because we're starting there. So if you look at Jenkins X, it has a number of templates for specific languages where you can define, well, those types of applications should be moved this way or retrofitted this way and so on. It's just the start because there is indeed a pretty big ask out there to have us guide them even more as to what the best practices are. That's something you're going to see more and more as part of CloudBees Core and what we call Core V3, which Christina Noren will talk about tomorrow during the keynote. That's around the standardization around specific best practices. The baseline might come from CloudBees. It helps get them started. And then down the road, they might create their own customized version of those templates that fit their own environment. But yes, it's definitely true that there is a lot more request from CloudBees to act as an advisor. And so we have, for example, a services offering, which we call CD Acceleration, Continuous Delivery Acceleration, that's more and more being used because companies don't want to just use a tool. The tool is the easy part, but guide me, help me how to best use that and craft my processes.
One of the challenges they will face is that when they've got it on-premise, they tend to customize. When they move to cloud, they're in ostensibly a shared environment. Therefore, they've got to learn to configure, not customize. That changes APIs. That changes perhaps some of the code they've written themselves. How many customers are prepared for that? And how much is that starting to impact your services team as they move with customers down this line of separating them out and redesigning?
What we're seeing is companies, for the most part, again, I'm generalizing here, but they are relatively pragmatic about it. They're trying to focus on the low-hanging fruit, first and foremost. They have enough applications that are easy to migrate. But you're right. I think a bunch of applications made a lot of assumptions about highly customized runtime environments. Those are big issues. It's not new, meaning that was a problem despite the cloud. When you start having those type of environments, let's not forget that a bunch of automation took place on-premise even before the cloud. Chef and Puppet were great tools on-premise even before we talked about going on public cloud infrastructure. Those have been recognized as being issues independently of cloud or not cloud.
When we talk about Kubernetes, one of the things people immediately think about is portability. But it's not quite as simple as that. It all depends upon whether or not you're in one instance or multiple instances. It all depends upon what the kernel is, how the kernel is designed, what you've done with your code. Where are you on the journey of just shipping people a container to get started? And how are customers beginning to approach a much more dynamic container model?
I have to say that at this point, we've had a pretty good experience with Kubernetes compatibility. CloudBees Core is certified on AWS, on Azure, on Google, on OpenShift, and on Pivotal, as well as PKS from VMware. We've certified on quite a few platforms. The kind of changes we had to do were sometimes small, sometimes non-existent. So at this point, we've got a pretty good confidence. It's just a start. So that opens the door to both threats and opportunities. Threats because as the ecosystem keeps growing and the complexity keeps growing, it's going to be important to make sure that those implementations remain aligned. That's one of the promise of Kubernetes, that you can really move from one to the other. So we'll see if that remains true. also opportunity, because to have this level of compatibility so early on in the ecosystem, I think is a pretty darn good start.
When we think about cloud, and in particular Kubernetes, one word comes to mind quickly, that's scale. How fast can you scale out? How much scaling do you actually expect to see? Are we talking about customers with 10 Kubernetes, 100 Kubernetes containers? Are we talking about thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands?
I think the jury is still out. I think there is sometimes a misconception, not a misconception, but it's kind of the, oh, your application can start on one container and in a snap it can run on 1,000 containers. Yeah, I'm sure. But is that going to be me? Probably not, because I don't need this type of skill. Some do. Google does. Do I need it? Maybe, but most likely not. The notion of scale is different. So what we're seeing, for example, with Jenkins X is that anybody making a change, that will generate a pipeline to validate that the change is valid, but that happens on a branch. And this then gets deployed automatically in a specific Kubernetes environment where you can click directly and see how it's working. And then you can decide to promote to staging or not. Here we're talking about scale, but in a different way. It's more breadth. It's not like I want to receive 1,000,000 invocations per second, but it's just that any developer should be able to see the result of their own invocation and see the application run with just that piece of code added. It creates a lot of temporary working environment. And so that's scale, because you're going to need a lot of containers and so on. But it's not scale as we hear about it sometimes, which is scaling workloads per se. But it's very important. So I think this is going to be more important. That's true of Jenkins X. If you look at the previous demo at the Microsoft conference, they had exactly the same feature set. As a developer, you can get your own private copy of what you're building in real time. So those are the kind of use cases that are going to be extremely successful with developers.
As we scale sideways, we come into the issue of security. Now, this isn't necessarily about hackers getting in, but it's about how secure can so many pipelines and everything be, so many developers into a system. We know Google's poured a lot of effort into cleaning up Kubernetes and advancing it. But Liz Rice showed very quickly at the Cloud Native Computing Foundation in Denmark recently just how quickly you could jump back and start to run privilege escalation around containers. How much of that worries you that you're not in complete control? On-premises, of course, you can set some controls. Once you're inside Kubernetes and once you're inside cloud, there are limits as to what you can lock down if people are going to have the flexibility that they expect.
This is a big topic. The good news is I don't think anybody is in denial about it. All of the cloud providers understand that it's an issue. I would say at least for the cloud providers, they tend to implement the Kubernetes feature set as part of other existing isolation mechanism among tenants, among accounts on the cloud. We benefit from some security from that standpoint. But overall, the biggest issue is one where what we're seeing right now is a redefinition of all of the computing environments, from the tool chain to the production environment. Everything is being redefined right now. When we do that, we kind of lose everything we've built in terms of security and assessment and robustness. Yeah, it's something we all need to be sensitive about. I know that at CloudBees, we're very sensitive about it. Doesn't mean we're going to do a perfect job, because like every company, you know, security is never a perfect job. We know we have a specific responsibility as a provider of one of the leading tool chain out there. If our tool chain gets hacked, it's not just our tool chain that gets hacked, but it's actually all of the software being produced on that tool chain potentially. So there is a one-to-many effect here. Yeah, we're very sensitive about it. I don't think it's specific to the cloud. I think it's just a reality whenever you have new approaches. You need to go through a hardening phase.
For new companies coming into CI/CD, coming to DevOps, this world is easy for them to adopt. They don't have complex processes, they don't have silos, they don't have problems. For mature companies coming in, we're seeing an awful lot of resistance. Part of that is a silo mentality, but part of it is a fear of the unknown. They think what they're going to end up with is a new silo called DevOps, rather than a more collaborative way of working. How do we get the message across that this is not about replacing old silos with new silos, but actually more about democratizing things?
I'm going to give you a non-cynic and a cynic answer. The non-cynic answer says that it's really about bottom-up adoption, meaning you build credibility by trying and showing how it works. But for that, you need to make sure that people actually want it to work. In lots of cases, people have an agenda. and might want to show you that it doesn't work. But if people are really willing to go through that transformation, then that's how you grow. You mushroom from a central place and you show good behavior and you can show actually results and good outcome. My cynic answer would be it does not matter, because enterprises have to realize that either they're going to morph and become software companies or they're going to become irrelevant. And so if they want to become irrelevant, that's their choice. If they want to prove themselves that the new way, the better way, is not a better way, well, fine, take that bet. But I don't know why I wouldn't make that bet. I'm saying this because we've been talking to a lot of companies in the last 8 years, and we can talk about software is eating the world, digital transformation, whatever you want. Truth, it doesn't really matter. What really matters is when you have a competitor that comes into your space, leverages software to win, and you realize that you don't have anything to fight. You can't fight. And that's when the big wake-up call happens. But if you're not willing to take that chance at that point in time, then I think maybe as a developer, you should change shop and move to a different company.
One of the interesting things about DevOps is we think about this as a software solution, a way to resolve an argument between two long-standing enemies, operations and developers. It's moved beyond that. It's now starting to include IT security. But there's a bigger play here. One of the things it does is it looks at our processes. It makes us understand that our processes are not set in stone. They are constantly in flux, especially if you're a company that is changing to meet market conditions on the fly. How far do we then start to see the underlying principles of DevOps driven into a business? Because you could argue that wherever there's a process, there's an opportunity to automate, to improve, and to apply the basic DevOps principles.
Yeah, I love it. I agree with you. I think we're focused on DevOps as dev and ops, but actually DevOps is everywhere. It's in every process, in every interaction between quote-unquote silos. And we sometimes talk about silo in the negative ways, but I would say just between two functions. We're never going to have sales and marketing and product as one thing. Makes no sense. But the way those collaborate can certainly be improved. The way we've started talking about it is that software is having an impact well beyond just software. Software, if you have continuous integration, continuous delivery, means that you start pushing new value incrementally. The drumbeat is accelerating. The value you're pushing starts to be continuous, and the evolution of your company is continuous as well. So your business model starts changing. Your go-to-market needs to adapt as well. What we're doing from a product standpoint is actually impacting entirely how your company must behave. Instead of having a company that's like a fixed shape, it's this shape that's constantly morphing based on the threads of changes taking place in software. And we visualize this as million threads of changes hitting production at any point in time and changing in a subtle fashion this shape that's our company. And we call that the continuous economy. We think it's more than just continuous delivery. It's impacting the way a company makes business. And so we think a lot more businesses are going to be evolving in a continuous fashion. Think about the automotive industry. Tesla acted as this maverick that's forcing everybody to rethink the way they do things. Well, you can buy a car, and years after, you still get new features that come in. You didn't pay more. It's just that the value of your car has not been set in stone when you bought your car. This is a typical example of a continuous economy.
I think it's going to be a very interesting couple of years as we see this widen out. I think it's going to be a very interesting conference. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ian.